Our readings for this Palm Sunday, I'll come back to why I'm saying this Palm Sunday, because Vatican II made some changes. We start out with what we call 2nd Isaiah, one of the servant songs. It's the latter part of Isaiah written when the Jewish people are about to be led out of the Babylonian captivity about 650 years before the birth of Christ. And they're not sure exactly who this servant was who was going to be servant to them, but also a type of shepherd, but he was going to suffer. Of course, the Christian community easily took over these servant songs and applied them to Jesus Christ and the fact that this ultimate king was going to suffer first. Then our second reading starts out with Paul. He picks up a hymn that already existed, the hymn of Christ, it's been called. Though he was in the form of God, he did not deem this something to be grasped at, but he emptied himself and became obedient unto death like every human being. But then Paul, to get the point across, adds to this existing hymn, even death on the cross. He had to learn obedience. He was obedient unto death. And one of the important things, I think, today, as I've mentioned this last night as well, is that about, 20 years ago, the movement started really that emphasized the humanity of Jesus. He was a really good guy, but just like us. One of the earliest heresies around the 400s was that all we have to do is imitate Christ on our own, and we can achieve the same thing. No, we have to have something happen to us, because all of us are born spiritually dead. We need a thing called grace, God's gift. But nevertheless, there's a reaction against it now that is equally heretical of stressing the divinity of Christ to the exclusion of the humanity. That somehow or other he only had the appearance of humanity. He only had the appearance of suffering. That if he wanted to, he could just have walked through those walls there. The risen Christ did, according to the testimony. But this is not the same as the Jesus of Nazareth, who first had to be crucified and was raised from the dead. Then he had a glorified body. So Paul, in today's reading from Philippians, that hymn, picks this theme up. Now, why did I say this Palm Sunday? Well, we have Mark's Gospel today, but in the good old days, back before Vatican II, you would have had Matthew's Gospel today, and then on Tuesday we would have had Mark, and then on Wednesday there would have been Luke, and then on Good Friday, as we still do now, we have John. But that meant that the overwhelming majority of Catholics in the world never heard the other Passion narratives, each of which is different. Attempting to blend them together is a total disservice to the original intent. The earliest part of the New Testament really are the writings of Paul. And then, as Jesus didn't come again in glory, they realized they better write down some other things. So the Passion narratives are the oldest part of the Gospels that we have, as opposed to the epistles of Paul. So therefore, even today's gospel has an interesting thing. It ended with the crucifixion. Later on, somebody added to it a chapter on the resurrection for Mark's gospel. So therefore, we can look at it as the way in which the early Christians did in their growing awareness of the significance of Jesus Christ, which means we have to lose ourselves. So first of all, we have to look at the reality of the humanity. And then secondly, like the people who go out to greet him, and then within 3 days they turn against him, just like us today. We make God in our own image and likeness, and if he doesn't conform to our expectations, then he must be wrong. And finally, we have to look at the various types of rejection of Christ. They're all there, and they sort of reflect our own contemporary situation today. The sins that we have to listen to over and over and over again for 2,000 years until we still don't get the point, because we'll be back here next year. The next year we'll be listening to a different gospel. The point is, this is a period, Lent, when we're called upon to look at how these gospels apply to us. As the Council of Trent said so very well in its catechism, who was responsible for the death of Christ? All people, because all are sinners. Despite what people think that the church was always anti-Semitic, it's a little bit hard to be anti-Semitic when we believe this Jewish man was crucified for us. Okay, the reality of the humanity. One of the things is, a number of years ago, I was preparing to have Good Friday services somewhere, and the lector, a high school teacher, very good speaker, she came over to me and said, isn't this reading from Hebrews 5 the same reading we had 2 weeks ago? Isn't this a mistranslation where it says he had to learn obedience? And I smiled because that was my homily. I already prepared it. In his true humanity, a first century Jew, he had to learn to be obedient as any other human being does. That is the Catholic authentic teaching. To stress anything else means you have to, you're in heresy. You can sound pious and be in heresy. That's the trouble. There were a lot of early heretics who were very pious, but they were in heresy. The tension is between the humanity and the divinity of Christ. The authentic teaching is he had a perfect humanity and a perfect divinity united in the second person of the Trinity, the Word who became flesh. Or, though he was in the form of God, he did not deem this something to be grasped at, but he emptied himself. Then we have, it's not as clear in today's version of the agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, but nevertheless he said, if my this hour could pass. In Luke's Gospel it's made even more clear, well, not your will, but mine be done. And then finally we have his true humanity when in this today's Gospel today he cries out with a psalm, my God, why have you forsaken me? Part of the human condition is many times to feel totally abandoned by God. Jesus was human, and he had to learn obedience, even obedience on the cross. So therefore, in order to really understand what these readings are saying to the church for the last 2,000 years, we have to come to grips again. His humanity, the eternal divinity at one point, the Word of God, through whom all things were made, at a given point in human history, entered human history as a creature. That's the heart of Christianity. That's why we recite it in the Creed. Second point, expectations. Well, the gospel reading we had outside, also from Mark, the Palm Sunday greetings of the people, probably it applied originally to another feast, but nevertheless, it's a perfect example of where we are, because they all greet him. They think all their temporal fortunes, all their expectations are going to be fulfilled. Then 3 days later, if we follow Holy Week, somehow or other, they want to kill him because he didn't live up to their expectations. They're closed in on themselves, just like we are. He becomes the king, but only, first of all, through the cross. He becomes the king only through the crucifixion and death, and only then does the Father raise him from the dead, as we will see next week, Easter Sunday. Raised from the dead, and then does he reign as the true Christ, the victor, Christ, the one who is victorious, the real king. Though they put the inscription on the cross in Mark's gospel, he was the king of the Jews, notice what's going to happen on Friday, if you're here. The reading from John has that it's inscribed in Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, because John's gospel is looking at moving out from this Jewish tradition to the whole Gentile world. That's why I said there's a disservice to try to blend these stories together. Each of them hits a different aspect. Each of them is speaking to us now. Why? My third and final point. There's all sorts of types of rejection of Christ. The most obvious in today's gospel is the theme that runs throughout Mark's gospel. At the trial scene, they could find no one to testify against him, but he's tried and convicted in spite of no evidence. But also, there's a zinger at the very end where the centurion, the Roman, the Gentile, the non-Jew, the non-believer, if you will, sees this man die a horrible death and then confesses, truly, this was the Son of God. I would like to remind you, however, that any good living Jew was considered a son of God. David was crowned with a psalm, this you are my beloved son, this day I have begotten you. That is not from the gospel originally. The gospel quotes it from a psalm, Psalm 2, because anyone in the line of David was a son of God. But therefore, any good living Jew was considered to be a son of God. So therefore, in itself, it was not considered to be a sign of divinity. But certainly in today's gospel it was, because Jesus was convicted in spite of no evidence, and the centurion confesses him in spite of the evidence of this man who's died a horrible death. We have the people, therefore, who wanted their own expectations. That's their sin. They can't lose themselves and face reality. But then we have some individuals. It's always easier to talk about groups, those people over there. We have Judas. What is Judas's real sin? It's a combination of greed and pride. We don't have it in today's gospel. We have it in Matthew's gospel. where he goes out and he hangs himself. He thinks he has finally committed the one original sin that even God can't forgive. He turns in on himself, because all sin is turning away from God and into oneself. So his main sin is greed. This guy is taking too long to establish the kingdom. Therefore, he's going to short-circuit it, betray him for however much it was. It doesn't say in today's gospel. Then we have one of my favorite people, good old Peter. What do we know about him in the gospel? He's either asleep, or he's denying Christ, or he's making another mistake. I always love to remind people that the words used for the definition of papal infallibility are from Luke's gospel, sort of a parallel to what we have today, that you will deny me three times, but I pray that when you have been converted, when you have turned, you will turn and strengthen your brothers. It's on Peter's weakness and his sinfulness, and therefore the strength when he recovers, that is the infallibility of the church, and therefore the Pope. It's rather interesting. It's not because of the great power of the Pope. It's rather resting on the sinful acknowledgement that Peter had. So Peter has a sin of pride. He will never deny Jesus. He's going to rely on himself. He's strong. He doesn't need this help from outside because he has all the answers, and of course he doesn't. So then he remembers the words of Jesus when he's denied. Here's the cock crow the second time, third time he denies Christ. And what is he immediately to do in today's gospel? He weeps. Unlike Judas, he weeps because he realizes he has failed in friendship. He's failed to respond in love. He has been self-centered. We too fall into that category. And then, of course, we have the famous scene of the hand washing of Pilate. That occurs actually in John's gospel more explicitly. Yet in the Eastern traditions, there is a tradition, only that, there's no real evidence for it, that Pilate finally converted. Pilate is one who, so like so many other people today, he could be walking around right now in Charlottesville. He just doesn't want to get involved. He believes in self-preservation. So ultimately, all the evidence in front of him, he just doesn't want to arouse any hostility. He would like to get out of this Judean principality where he is at that point. He would love to probably go on to a bigger and higher place somewhere in the Roman Empire instead of being stuck in Judea. But nevertheless, he's not going to do anything to blot his copybook. He'll turn the other way. How many times do we engage in self-preservation? How many times are we resting upon ourselves in pride? How many times do we do something out of selfishness or greed? All these stories are in today's Gospels. We'll go through this week of Holy Week, again examining ourselves as we prepare for next week when we renew our baptismal promises, when we renew our belief that we have been raised with Christ and reign with him so that we can come to the Eucharistic altar and celebrate the Eucharist as members of the mystical body through Christ, with him, and in him.